Welcome to the Independent Teacher Podcast with me, your host, Susan Pallister. And in today's edition, we're going to be talking to Dr. Linda Lefevre, discussing the impact of the pandemic on university education. We'll also be looking to the future and considering what will university education look like in the next 5 to 10 years. Hi, Linda. Could you just tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and the work that you do at the moment?
So I'm a senior lecturer at the University of Birmingham now for the last 19 years. Originally, I came as a postdoc and I used to work on, I'm a reproductive biologist. I used to work on sperm capacitation, which is, you know, sperm maturing in the female tract before it could fertilize. And then more recently, I became sort of deputy director of education for digital education and distance learning. And that was just before COVID. And it was sort of obviously a very topical and very challenging time for me, but I really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay. And you mentioned there that you've got a focus on digital and distance learning. Is there actually much of a difference between digital and distance learning?
And we're trying to come up with our own definition at the University of Birmingham, and we don't agree within ourselves. So there's a bit of work to be done on that one.
How did the pandemic, and I know we're still going through it, how did it change education for university students?
Well, when I took the role just before COVID, the challenge was to how am I going to incorporate more of the digital education in our college, for example, you know, interacting with my colleagues. And that would have taken a long time to happen. With COVID, we had no choice. Yeah, we had to get used to Zoom. We had to get used to using different software to sort of do our sessions. So what it has done is that it has speed up the use of digital education into a higher education sort of environment. So using different software platforms, Teams, for example, that you can do a mixture of different things. So that's really how it's really acceleration of the digital education.
And was it happening before, Linda?
It was happening, but very slowly. So we have our virtual learning environment, which all the handouts for the lectures were provided ahead of time. All the information of all the in-course assessment and the exams and some videos and some quizzes were there before. We used to record our lectures. So our lectures were live, didactic, and we used to record them live. And then they used to then be stored in that virtual learning environment. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what we've used. So it was more like it was just like to contain things, contain the recordings that we did live and, you know, keep all the information per module in one place.
And then COVID came along. There's no face-to-face lectures, but did you just use the old lectures then that had been there for previous years?
For last year, what we tried to do is re-record our lectures, because there's one thing recording live with an audience, but we didn't want to do that because it wasn't fair on the students. We wanted to do a bespoke recordings, and what we used to do, what we're trying to do, is to do shorter recordings, so we didn't have the whole hour, although students could stop. But we did little blocks of content. So, you know, you had part 1, 2, 3. So students then could stop and take some notes. And that forced us to, you know, for me, it forced me to repackage my lecture into little contents instead of just going off as a one-off as a lecture, as we used to do. So it forced me to rethink my lecture, to package it and to give some specific learning outcomes.
And what do you think the main benefits were then of this new approach to delivering lectures to the students?
Yeah, well, flexibility for start, because in the sense that students could listen to the lectures whenever and wherever they wanted, at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, first thing in the morning, in the middle of the day, they had more flexibility. They had a few live sessions on Zoom that they had to attend, but all the pre-recordings that were associated with that interactive small group teaching that we had, they could do in their own time. And the accessibility, they could access on their, you know, iPad, computers, phones, wherever they wanted. And what it did as well is that we gave them additional support, because we were trying to, you know, in the each of the modules, in addition to the pre-recording, we had a live sessions. We also give them extra videos, maybe extra quizzes, because we were not, again, there to sort of answer all the questions. We felt what did happen is that we probably gave them too much information, too much material, because we were trying to support them too much, and they probably felt overwhelmed. I think we were trying to be very caring and supportive, but for the students' point of view, it was a bit overwhelming.
Is it all back face-to-face at Birmingham now?
So everything's back face-to-face. We're going to try to pre-record some core content. So just a snippet of the core information that they need, and then go back in the lecture and then have a bit more explanation, more quizzes with students live, so they could then test themselves and get instant feedback and get a little bit more interaction, which actually is better for their understanding as well. So everything's back to normal.
There'll be some students who will feel that they are now losing out, that you've returned to face-to-face teaching with a more didactic style of delivery, or even perhaps not feeling that they can contribute, say, in a large lecture hall where you've got 400 students to ask questions, whereas before they'd have been able to do that.
Well, they won't lose out. So what we've invested in softwares. So we invested in Padlet, and the good stuff is that it's very simple. You just click on the link. Students go in a live session, and if you have questions, they could ask question anonymously. They don't have to use their voice. They could just write a question, and the lecturer could just see those questions, address them. We tried to submit them ahead of time as well, so people could listen to the lectures and actually start asking questions before they come, and then the lecturers will then take on those questions. So we're continuing using that approach. And even though our virtual learning environment is non-anonymous, we can embed Padlet, and therefore suddenly becomes anonymous. So we are trying to get voices, because that was one thing that I felt, that students will lose voices, because you have those who are confident to ask questions, but then you have those who prefer to do it either as a private chat. But we're going to continue using those Padlets. And then students are always welcome to email us, and they do so. Or they come to see you at the end of the lecture. But we continue using technology because it does work. And the other thing we do as well is that we use voting. So we ask a question, and then we have voting. And then when the answers come up, students could see if they got the answers right, how they're doing compared to their peers. Tell them to, they need to sort of work a little bit harder, because they, you know, everybody gets it, they don't. And that, for us as academic, we can stop and then re-explain the concepts by seeing how many students get them right or wrong. Mm-hmm. So that's another way, it's anonymous. And it's another thing that we use in the past, but we're going to continue using in our interactive lectures.
Mm-hmm. And what about any students who might say to you, do you know what, I would prefer not to do any face-to-face, I don't want to come into lectures?
The answer is, if they choose to come to a campus university, we expect them to come to campus, right? The only exception at the moment is if you're an international person and you can't come on campus because of travel restrictions, or there's something, and therefore we will offer an online version. And we will also do that for those students who have COVID and need to isolate. So we're going to be able to offer an online type of version. But if you sign up to come to Birmingham, it is a campus university. We're not going to do the blended. Some courses do, because they're highly international and they will have to do that. So we have what we call the hybrid rooms, which you can teach live, and you have the you know, cameras, and you can see students on Zoom as well as interacting with the students. And it's very clear, you can hear the students asking questions both on Zoom but for our college, for example, which we have lots of programs that are vocational, like medicine, pharmacy, dentistry, we expect them to come. Even biomedical science, we do expect them coming face to face, because if you choose a campus, you expect them to come. And those who don't, then there's other opportunities like distance learning, and this is where it's quite different.
We've talked about what the benefits were and how you're trying to integrate them into the courses you're offering now. What were the main challenges over the last 18 months for the students, and then obviously for the lecturers as well?
The biggest one would be digital poverty. Yeah, not every student have a computer. Not every student, sometimes they have, but they have to share it between a few of them. The Wi-Fi is not good. We did keep the buildings open and students could come to the library and so on. So digital poverty was a bit of an issue during COVID, but it was difficult for some students to access and to come to live sessions. They were always sort of a bit behind. And even putting the cameras on, you know, some students didn't want to put the cameras on for many reasons. I used to always show the mess behind me to encourage them that, you know, it's not perfect. It is life. It is my home. I have cats coming in the screen all the time and we laugh about it. I even had Andy Street coming into my drive and I took my laptop out. So and he said hi to the students on my Zoom. You know, all sorts of funny things did happen. But that is a bit of an issue. And the other challenge for the students was the time management, because in the past they had a timetable and they would just turn up for all of the teaching content following a timetable. Now suddenly they had to organize themselves because, you know, they had to listen to their pre-recording sessions and they had to do all the work before they came to the live sessions on Zoom or face-to-face at the time. And that took a lot of time, a lot of skills of time management, which they didn't have, mm-hmm. because again, they came from a school that everything was given to them and, you know, they followed a timetable. It's good for skills for later on for employment, but that mm-hmm. was very difficult for the students. And still a little bit this year, because we're still having this blended approach, but a bit less. It's a bit more guided now because everything that's timetable will happen face to face. For the lecturers, it was using, you know, we were giving didactics. We used to come to the lecture theatre and give our lectures very old-fashioned way. So we had to become more innovative. We had to adapt our teaching for the need of the students. We had to use software. I mean, we're not all of us good wizards with computers and software, and so there was a steep learning curve, you know, using Zoom and using all the everything that could be used. You can have to use the breakout rooms and the whiteboards and, you know, showing, sharing, etc., voting. There's lots of things just on Zoom, and adding the extra things that we had to do, record our lectures at home. Yeah, but that was good. I really enjoyed it. Some people enjoyed it less because it was just a lot to deal with, and we're all different. So it was hard for both lecturers as well as students for different reasons. But in the end, I think everybody sort of, we've done it, and we, you know, yes, we could have done better, but we've done a pretty good job. Mm. You know, we delivered what we were meant to. You know, students graduated.
Could they get access to libraries of resources then? You know, like normally you'd go to the university library, and I know there are some online resources. Was that a problem? Was that a challenge?
Well, students rely a lot on their handouts and the recordings of lectures. Now, the library has invested a lot of money in e-textbooks last year, and mm-hmm. they're continuing this year. And they're probably going to stop a little bit in the following years, because hopefully we'll be back face to face. But a lot of investment has been done, so students, they could still book a time where they could go to the library, but a lot of it was available electronically, so they didn't really have to. And a lot of the scientific journals are actually, we have online access or open access as well, so that the older students, that didn't affect them at all. It was maybe year one and two. They could still come to the library and book a spot, but a lot of the textbooks were available. So I don't feel, and then we encouraged them to go, you know, there's a great website like Khan Academy and other ones that are great on YouTube that, you know, support their learning in addition to mm-hmm. what we give them and all the handouts and mm-hmm. and so on. So I don't think in that sense they, you know, we miss on that.
Okay. So there were quite a number of disgruntled students, weren't there? And you kept hearing about them in the news, complaining and wanting money back. From what you've said, you know, they were getting, certainly in terms of learning, some excellent learning and some excellent support.
We have delivered on the education. Now, obviously, students were unhappy because what they've missed out is the social aspect of it. Yeah. And this is that was my point about, you know, students don't feel comfortable coming to campus and having face-to-face teaching. This is, you know, they will sign up to do a distance learning course, means that normally you don't have to come to campus or see people and everything is asynchronous. You do that in your own time. Now, our students didn't sign up for a distance learning course, but what we have given them is a online version, which part of it was distance learning they could do at home. Some of them went back home, some of them stayed on campus just because they paid for it and they just want to be around. So they lost that social aspect. They also lost part of the facilities. You know, we couldn't give them all the lab skills, for example, for biomed. So not coming in the labs, I think that it was a dissatisfaction. Students didn't know each other. I mean, I met students in Welcome Week this week that tell me that, you know, they met more people, you know, last week than they have in the whole of last year because they were just not around. It's really, so accommodation, I could see why they want the money back because we can give it back to them. They could come to the facilities in the sense that they could come to the library and the computer clusters. It was just more difficult. Assessment was different. They had to do it online. Now they had a little bit either the same time, but it was open book. They could access their notes. They could prepare their notes to do that. But obviously it was timed and it was using your computer at home with Wi-Fi issues, with you know, submission issues. And it's all those little issues that in the end becomes like a big problem because it's a stressful time. Some exams, they had 24 hours to answer the questions. So that to me was a benefit. I mean, we had more students who had two ones and a first compared to in the past. Maybe I'm biased, but I felt that, you know, we have worked really hard to provide good quality teaching. But as a lecturer, you know, we did deliver and we did graduate the students with, you know, most of the skills, and we have been really innovative, I have to say. Program leads and have worked really hard and module leads, etc., to come up with, you know, innovative way for them to get those skills that they needed to graduate.
So putting all this together, how do you actually think that university education is going to change, say, over the next 5 to 10 years?
So I think the biggest change is probably the didactic lecture. You know, we used to stand there as an expert and talk to the students or at the students. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though you were trying to make it interactive, when you have like medicine, for example, is, you know, 400 students in a room, you know, you have to be very confident to ask a question in front of everybody. So what we're trying to step away from now, this is the message that we have coming from the top, is that stay away from didactic lectures, make them more interactive. That's what students like. So, you know, record the core content. Students could, you know, use that flexibility and listen to their own time. Stay away from didactic and make them more interactive because it's a better way to learn.
Will there be a role for VR?
So I think the VR and the artificial intelligence and so on is going to allow us to prepare students for when they actually come in the lab and have better experience. I mean, we're not there yet because obviously of the cost, but that's something that in the next 5-10 years we'll have more of that. And even for people that do distance learning course, those are things that, you know, will be available to them that at the moment, you know, you have to come in and do these things. The other thing as well is that, you know, although we are normally, if you have an invited speaker, because, you know, he's an expert on X, you know, in the past they used to take a, you know, flight and come for a few days, and well, now, you know, we've done Zoom, it's easy to do, we can have experts coming and giving lectures. I mean, I'm developing some CPDs with people and they have people from all over the country, you know, giving some teaching for the CPD to support other learners. You don't have to come face to face anymore. Yes, it's nice if you do when you go to a conference, but for students, you can have somebody that's, you know, in Australia, and we want to invite them and inspire them. Well, we can do that. That's great for the environment. Yeah. Those are the main things, really, sort of moving away from didactic lectures, and you know, that more increasing collaboration, you know, with other universities and around the world.
Linda, is the way you assess going to change as a result of the pandemic?
So the format will definitely change, but the way we're going to assess them is using online platforms. But from now on, there is going to be no more paper-based. It's going to all be done electronically. So either open book or timed exams at home or on campus, but we're not going back to paper-based anymore.
So none of those exams that would have taken place in the Great Hall in my day?
No, they will. I mean, no, they won't happen anymore. Too many students in one place. No, they will all be done electronically. Like we've done it for 2 years. So we're going to continue using that. It does work. It's easier. We have access, then we don't have to print anything or copy anything. We were going to go down that route anyway with time, because we're trying to mark electronically. So that was something that's been enforced for the last 2 years or so before the pandemic. So we were going down that route anyway, but we have software now to do examination online. And again, it provides flexibility for the program, for markers, for the students. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. It's quite interesting you mentioned the moving away from didactic, because I always used to wonder about schools where, you know, we were told, you know, don't give lectures to sixth formers. And I used to think, yeah, but they're going to go to university and a lot of them are going to just get these didactic lectures. So it looks like maybe there's going to be more symbiosis then between what goes on in a sixth form and what's going to happen when the students get to university. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree. I think there's many things that should happen at school that would help with university. One of them, for example, is that independent learning. I know I talk to my daughters and they're really strict to the curriculum. You know, if I tell them something on the outside to support their learning, oh, no, you know, you're in university, we don't want to hear that. We want to stick to the curriculum. And I found it's a shame having their phone on their hands all the time. They don't really want to look out that information. But when it comes to university, they have to, particularly when they're in the third year. Mm-hmm. We give them core material, but we are testing them on the outside. So, if from day one, or coming from school, they already had that skill of being a little bit more independent learning and relying less on their notes and not wanting to know anything else because it's about recall. Yeah, at school, yeah, they do lots of recall. Comes to university, I think, you know, we assess them on understanding, and therefore they need to stay away from recall, you know, and they change because when they come, they take notes about everything. So I tell students to stop and listen, then take their own notes and maybe do a bit of a mind map about, you know, mm-hmm, what the lecture is about, and then add the question, you know, here, I don't understand, I need to look it up. But they end up taking everything, you know, you say hello, they write hello, you know, yeah, they just, and then they change, they get to year two and they know they can, the volume is massive. They have to change the way they learn, and they realize that understanding is important. You know, if you're going to use also, you know, we're using more software and more online, you know, that should start at school. I mean, some schools are already doing it very well. It's just to make it more fair that more schools are have those possibilities as well. So when it comes to university, they know where to get the information. They're more familiarized with Teams, for example, that we're going towards using Teams, where lots of collaboration online, you can record, you can teach, you can, you know, everything is in one place, which is great. So it'd be great for schools to use something similar.
So you're a great believer in the EPQ.
Oh, I love the EPQ. Yeah. I think it's fantastic for them to have a topic and research it, and absolutely.
Yeah. I've got an episode coming up where I'm actually talking to the founder of Rethinking Assessment, and it's an organisation that's trying to get away from schools just assessing, as you've said, in terms of how much knowledge you've got and how much you can remember on a given day, only doing 5 GCSEs, and then the rest of it is based on independent learning, research projects, just helping them to develop those skills that universities require, and also skills that, if you don't go to university, that workplaces might require, like collaboration or public speaking. And that's what this movement is about. But it's about trying to get the schools and the teachers to let go of this need that they have to assess in terms of GCSEs at 16. I'd get rid of them. I really would.
Well, hopefully there will be, you know, I come from Canada where I was assessed throughout the year. And then I had an average at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, because how fair is it to study something for 2 years and to be assessed on 1 or 2 days and that's it, that's your mark? I mean, I could be ill, I could not feeling well. I mean, my daughter was very good, got really stressed at one point. You know, there's so many things that could affect them. I don't think this is good at all. But interestingly, you were talking about, so recall for some programs is very important. So medicine, for example, the recall is really important because they
Right.
have to learn so many different facts. And for them, you know, having a multiple choice question or a short answer question is still very, very relevant because they need to know their stuff. However, for scientists, there's no need to, you know, to recall. What we want them is to understand, and biology is so complicated, moves all the time, is to be more critical. We want them to become more critical thinkers.
Thinkers, yeah.
So when we are thinking about looking at our assessment as well, because you know everybody uses a multiple choice question, but it's not relevant for every program. But for some, recall is very important, like for medicine, for example. So I think it's important to have a balance, not to go too much one way and the
Right.
other
Yeah.
way.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, in life, you know, critical thinking is really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Right. Okay. So thank you ever so much, Linda, for joining us on this edition
Pleasure.
of the Independent Teacher Podcast. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
You have been listening to the Independent Teacher Podcast with your host, Susan Pallister, and my very special guest, Dr. Linda Lefevre from Birmingham University. Don't forget to tune in to future episodes of the Independent Teacher Podcast.